Chapter 14. Stinging Gnats. Drizzt walked into a clearing on a high bluff outside of Citadel Adbar 2 days later. Below him, some battles continued, but the victory was essentially complete. After the rout of the giants on Horngar's Horn and the orc legions they were supporting, the three armies, Sinifane's elves, Brunner's dwarves, and the might of Citadel Adbar itself, had wasted no time putting the other pockets of orc enemies to the sword. And always there remained this fourth force, all but unseen, whispered about in hushed tones by the elves and dwarves, and often revealed by the screams of terror of their enemies. Now it was clear. Citadel Adbar was free, and while Drizzt had come to the call of a secret ally, one whose identity he strongly suspected, Brunner, Sinifane, Catti Bree, and Orethio Spikes were plotting the road to Citadel Felbar. "So at last you will reveal the truth to me," Drizzt said when he walked into the clearing to join Mickey and Lady Z, beautiful elves both, who waited for him there. "Which truth?" Mickey asked. "There are many truths. Some concern you, and some do not. Start with those that concern me."
"End with them as well," said Lady Z, who Drizzt thought the more haughty and less friendly of the two.
"Start with Jarlaxle, then," said Drizzt.
"The less you speak that name aloud, my old friend, the happier I will be," said another voice, and out of the trees, not across the way, but those right behind Drizzt, those Drizzt had just passed, came the drow mercenary. He walked up beside Drizzt and bowed gracefully, brushing his huge hat on the ground.
"Well met. Again."
"And it would seem that I am in your debt once more," said Drizzt, offering a respectful bow of his own.
"I do what I do for my own sake as much as yours. So the only debt I hold over you is one of friendship," Jarlaxle graciously replied.
Lady Z rolled her eyes, and those eyes seemed strange to Drizzt at that moment, as if she had let down a bit of her disguise, enough for him to see a hint of a draconic undertone. His thoughts of mind flayers vanished, and Drizzt felt his knees go weak as he realized the truth of these rather remarkable sisters. He thought of the giants on Horngar's Horn, and of the frenzied flight of the main encampment of enemies north of Mithril Hall. He knew what beasts could invoke such terror, and knew, too, that his enemies were employing just such beasts in their war.
"Have you figured them out yet?" Jarlaxle asked, and like Drizzt, he turned his gaze to the strange sisters.
Drizzt continued to stare at Lady Z, and the elf responded with a wicked smile and flared her now clearly reptilian eyes. Drizzt swallowed hard, uncomfortable and unsure. He heard Brunner's warnings about Jarlaxle's possible motives ringing in his thoughts once more, and it took him a long time indeed to tear his gaze from the elf, who was not an elf, and look back at the mercenary.
"I have hints, nothing more," he said.
"He knows what we are," Lady Z told Jarlaxle.
"Ah, but does he know why we are here?" her sister asked.
"I'll not deny that," Drizzt said to Jarlaxle, though he was staring once more at Lady Z, unable to tear his gaze from her. She knew it, too, he could tell, and was enjoying it immensely.
"Which?"
the ever-cryptic mercenary asked.
"Dragons," Drizzt answered.
"Well played," Jarlaxle congratulated. "I give you Tazmikella and Ilnazara, sisters as they claim, but hardly contained within the pretty elf trappings they have chosen."
"What is your game, Jarlaxle?" Drizzt asked.
"I have come to support friends."
"You have gone to war with Menzo Baranzon, with Matron Mother Quenthal, or whomever it is that now rules that wretched place?"
"I would not go that far."
"Are these the same dragons Tiago calls his own, then?" Drizzt asked,
and he regretted it as soon as the words left his mouth.
Both of the women scowled fiercely at him and nearly overwhelmed him with projected thoughts of them melting him where he stood and eating him after. "The orc warlord Hartusk has gained the assistance of a couple of whites," Jarlaxle explained. "Our allies here are not white dragons, not chromatic dragons at all, and I think you owe them an apology for even insinuating as much." Drizzt stared at them hard, but didn't offer anything in the way of an apology. "Am I to believe that the orcs commandeered the help of dragons all by themselves?" "I believe that Matron Mother Quenthal and Gromph likely played a role." "I am not well versed in dragonkind," Drizzt admitted. "These two before me are not chromatic, you say?" "We are metallic," Taz Mikella answered, coming forward. She stopped short of Drizzt, smiled rather wickedly, then took his breath away as she reverted to her natural form, a gigantic copper dragon nearly filling the lee in front of him. "Copper," Jarlaxle said dryly. And he chuckled a bit, clearly enjoying the discomfort that marked Drizzt's unavoidable backstepping. "Exciting ladies, trust me."
"Why would they?" Drizzt started to ask.
"We have our own reasons, and they remain one of those secrets that do not concern you, Drizzt Awerden,"
Ilnazara answered for Jarlaxle.
"They have come with you, and they wage war on the orcs and giants who are allied with Menzo Berenzon,"
Drizzt managed to stammer, trying very hard to get his legs back under him. He had met a couple of dragons before, and never had it been a pleasant experience.
"Which is why I must insist on your ability to keep a secret," said Jarlaxle.
Drizzt turned on him sternly.
"Why do you wish Menzo Berenzon to lose?"
"Lose?"
Jarlaxle replied with feigned incredulity.
"Menzo Berenzon has no real stake in any of this, of course. They're just causing trouble. From my perspective, the Silver Marches are much more profitable to me if they're held by the kingdoms of Lurwar, not if Many Arrows darkens the area and ruins the trade."
Drizzt listened to every word and believed none of it. There was something more at play here, but he also knew enough about Jarlaxle to realize that the truth of his involvement surely went much deeper than his offered reasoning, and into convoluted twists and turns that would make the most ferocious of Lolth's chaotic disciples shake her head in disbelief.
"I want the orcs to lose," Jarlaxle added, his voice full of certainty and sincerity.
"Menzo Berenzon has all but abandoned them now. Their game's complete in this region. This is not a difficult choice for me, though again your secrecy is much appreciated." Drizzt looked at him, looked him straight in the eye, silently conveying that he would expect an answer to his question at some other time.
"Now, there is much afoot with the melting on in full," Jarlaxle said. "My friends here have agreed to show us, if you are willing."
He pointed to the side of the lee, where now sat a pair of leather contraptions and the straps that made up saddles for dragons.
"Are you ready for a rare thrill, my friend?" Jarlaxle asked, when Drizzt did not respond.
"To ride a dragon?"
Drizzt replied, his voice barely a whisper.
"There are several ways to ride a dragon," Jarlaxle said, and Ilnazara giggled, rather lewdly, Drizzt thought, and he let the thought go at that.
"And they are all thrilling," Jarlaxle finished.
"Come, let us go and see the lay of the land, that we might better plot the destruction of our common enemies."
Catti Bree sat alone that night in front of the bonfire burning in the dwarven encampment along one of Citadel Adbar's defensive channels. There was no need for secrecy now. The entire garrison of Adbar had come forth, save those few brigades securing the lower tunnels. And Adbar was the largest of the dwarven enclaves in the north, housing nearly 20,000 dwarves, and with a garrison that included among its ranks nearly half that number of battle veterans. the force of 500 that had rescued King Harnoff's battle group and opened the way for Citadel Adbar to shatter the siege, now numbered almost 9,000. The elves were out and about. Any approaching enemy force large enough to threaten the power assembled here would be spotted long before they neared the camp. Catti Bree, too, turned her eyes outward. She cast a divination spell, eager to explore this new power she had come to understand in the long months trapped in Mithril Hall. She peered into the flames, too intently at first, she realized, when nothing came to her. She sat back and forced herself to calm down, to suppress her eagerness, and so allow herself to be more passive and more receptive. She even reached forth and put her hand into the flames, feeling their tickling dance, her ruby ring glowing with power and energy as it protected her flesh. And that magical band, in the dance of the flames, brought Catti Bree's thoughts more fully into the living fire, and through the flames to the elemental plane of fire. She saw through the flames and into another fire. She saw orcs. Thousands of orcs, tens of thousands of orcs. They danced along ruined walls and drummed on the stretched skins of some unfortunate victims. They punched each other as they passed in their wild dancing. Males threw females to the ground and leaped atop them, and the same was true in reverse. And the song played in her head, a discordant cacophony of whoops and hollers and snarls and hisses, punctuated by the occasional scream, usually caught somewhere between ecstasy and agony. Catti Bree felt as if she were playing voyeur to a strange orgy of unbridled bloodlust, manifesting itself in an orgy of unbridled lust. But she couldn't turn away. It was simply too overwhelming, too powerful, too vile. They ripped each other's skin. They bit each other savagely, drawing blood. And they drank that blood, even licked it from one another. And they rubbed it all over their half-naked and often fully naked bodies. It took Catti Bree a long while to get past the immediacy of the powerful images, to recognize that this was Sundabar she was viewing. Broken, despoiled, violated Sundabar. Then she saw thousands of campfires around the place, and through her ruby ring sensed thousands more. The woman lost her breath at the realization of the sheer size of Many Arrows' forces. "Hundreds of thousands," she whispered. But what was she seeing? Was it the past, the fall of the proud city? The present, where the orcs were known to be mustering? Or was this the future of Lurwar? It was all too confusing, but again, the woman did not concentrate on it too deeply, and rather let the fires guide her. She found herself gazing through the hearth of a quiet room, where three dwarves slumped in chairs, their expressions full of misery and despair. Citadel Felbar, she realized, though she did not recognize these particular dwarves. But she knew it was Felbar, and she could feel the desperation. And so she went from fire to fire around the lands, to orc camps and ogre clusters, to destroyed Nesme and crouched Silvery Moon. She fell back, startled, at the sudden sight of a magical fireball or some other explosion, with roiling flames lifting up into the air and curling under to form a cap and stalk like some tall mushroom. Orc forms, silhouetted by the brilliance of the blast, rushed around frantically, and a line of riders, human riders, crested the hilltop the orcs had taken as a camp, weapons shining in the firelight. And then in the magical light, as the area lit up, Catti Bree recognized the uniform of the Knights in Silver, the famed Silvery Moon garrison. She soon found the leader of the band, turning her mount and yelling orders, and though Catti Bree couldn't see much of the fighting from the angle afforded her by the flames, she knew that the orcs were being routed. Despite her receptive determination, or perhaps because of it, the woman leaned forward intently. An orc came at the Knight in Silver, and the woman dispatched the creature with a quick parry and thrust. An ogre appeared at the side of Catti Bree's line of vision, and she wanted to call out a warning to the Knight in Silver, but she couldn't. Something flashed past the knight, and the ogre flew away. Even as Catti Bree tried to sort it out, she fell back and cried out in shock.
Wulfgar!
The diviner laughed and wept, tears streaming down her face as the realization hit with overwhelming force and speed.
Wulfgar!
And a pony rushed past him, the rider firing a hand crossbow off one way and throwing a ceramic ball the other way, then drawing a three-bladed dagger and a fabulous rapier as he too rushed happily and eagerly into battle.
They were alive.
Drizzt simply couldn't believe the turn of events, or the experience that had been offered him. The air was cold, but it hardly bothered him, given the thrill of the ride and the view. Oh, the view Taz Mikella was affording him! The silver marches rolled out below him as the dragon soared on high. Dark silhouettes of mountains and a million points of firelight assailed his sensibilities, threatening to overwhelm him with the sheer scale and grandeur of it all. Flashes in the south caught his attention, and caught Taz Mikella's as well, apparently, and her sister's, carrying Jarlaxle beside them. The dragons veered and swooped lower, following the line of the Cerbren below and speeding across the lands. They passed the great bridge east of Mithril Hall, keeping high over the campfires of the besieging orc force. Drizzt could see them clearly, four separate encampments, with one by the Cerbren, one to the west in Keeper's Dale, and two up north, with the largest by far being the northernmost. The orcs had returned to the same strategy they had employed when Drizzt and the others had broken out. The drow noted it carefully, measuring the size of the bands as he sorted various strategies for overrunning the fools. That scene was left far behind in short order as the dragons rolled across the miles, the wind so strong that it blew tears from Drizzt's lavender eyes. Up again went Taz Mikella, slowing now as she approached the region where they had seen the flashes. Far in the distance, Drizzt noted a great concentration of fires and magical lights. It was Silvery Moon, with the orc siege force holding the fields around it, and those fields nearest the city's wall magically lit to aid the sentries. For a moment, the drow figured that Jarlaxle and his dragon friends must be taking him to that place, a city where he had once known great friendship and special allies. But Taz Mikella banked suddenly, soaring out to the west. On a bare hilltop, a battle raged. From this great height, Drizzt couldn't make out many of the particulars, but it became clear to him that a force of riders was routing and scattering an orc encampment. He smiled and nodded.
"Are we going to help?"
he asked his mount, having to shout to hear his own voice above the wind. Reflexively, Drizzt reached for Tolmeril and thought it would be a fine thing indeed to rain lightning arrows upon the orcs from this most extraordinary mount.
"They do not need us," the dragon answered, and her great voice was not at all thin in the wind. "Nor do we wish to reveal ourselves too soon to our enemies. Let their dragons be located and engaged before we are known."
"A closer look?" Drizzt asked.
He couldn't resist the pull of that battle, or the idea that someone down there possibly needed him.
"Quickly?"
In response, the dragon dived suddenly and even tucked her leathery wings, gaining speed in freefall. She spread wide those wings and leveled out so gracefully and powerfully that Drizzt felt as if his stomach was still falling, and he could hardly hold himself upright in the saddle against the tremendous press of changing momentum. By the time he had straightened himself and secured his seat, the battle was already behind him. He glanced back for a fleeting moment and noted an orc looking back at him in confusion, and noted...
"Turn back!" he yelled at Taz Mikella.
"No," came her calm and unequivocal response, and now the battle was far, far behind them. Drizzt looked back anyway. He had to. And though he could see nothing more than the distant flames by then, that last image burned in his thoughts.
Wulfgar!